Welcome to the podcast, Agia Goes Viral. We here at the Arab-German Young Academy of Sciences and Humanities, Agia for short, invite you to join us as we explore the diverse implications of COVID-19 for science and society at large. In each episode, Arab and German Agia members and alumni from different scientific disciplines come together to discuss research on and amidst the coronavirus pandemic. As the current situation challenges our societies in unprecedented ways, we hope this platform will serve as a space for dialogue and lead to an inspiring exchange. In today's podcast episode, we welcome Agia members Professor Lena Maria Müller from Germany and Professor Mohammed Al-Qattan from Kuwait. Today's conversation will delve into the implications of COVID-19 for the Islamic pilgrimage, the Hajj, and for public health. Mohammed will also provide some practical tips for staying fit while working from home. Lena Maria Müller is currently acting professor of Islamic law at the University of Leipzig, as well as one of Agia's two co-presidents. Mohammed Al-Qattan is associate professor at the Public Authority for Applied Education and Training in Kuwait, and the Agia member in charge of the Academy's working group, Health and Society.
Hello, Mohammed. How are you?
Hi, Lena. I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm good, too. Thank you very much. How is the current situation in Kuwait with the corona pandemic?
So it's actually a unique situation, since you already know that we are in Ramadan right now. And you know, Ramadan, it's a really special month. And with this corona pandemic is actually changing the whole thing. So we have a curfew from 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. in the morning. And nobody could allow to go outside. Everything's closed except the supermarket that we could allow to go from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Other than that, there is nothing you could do. So most likely we are staying at home. We are not allowed to do any social activity and visiting our relative and parents. So this is why it's really weird to really feel the Ramadan this way. But hopefully everything gonna be good, and in the future, hopefully this corona, hopefully we'll find a treatment for it, and the life gonna go back as usual.
Absolutely, hopefully, yes. It is interesting that you mentioned the effects on communal religious life. I recently looked into the issue myself for a little piece that I authored. And of course, throughout the Muslim world, throughout Muslim communities, we can see that Friday prayers have all been suspended. In Germany, Muslim communities were very quick to respond and act, and similarly canceled all communal prayers. Currently, they are slowly thinking about reopening churches and mosques and synagogues under very strict conditions. I read an article and I saw a little video that in Kuwait, they even changed the call to prayer. Instead of calling on people to hasten to prayer, they are now called upon to pray in their homes. Is that correct?
That's absolutely true. And it's really, like I told you, it's really weird that because now in this month, most of the people go actually pray in the mosque. And for this situation, we have to stay at home and pray at home. So tell me about the article that you just mentioned about. What's it all about?
So the article that I authored, it's a short piece that I co-authored with my colleague Serda Kurnas from the Humboldt University in Berlin. And what we were interested in was first to find out how the corona pandemic affects religious life, especially for Muslim communities in general, but then also the topic that is sort of looming on the horizon for Muslim communities is the upcoming Hajj pilgrimage and the potential of Saudi Arabia having to cancel the pilgrimage. And what we were interested in is is the question of how a state, which happens to be the custodian of the two holy mosques or the two holy sites at the moment, if and how such a state can call off the annual pilgrimage, how such a decision can be justified theologically, because as you will know, the Hajj pilgrimage is considered to be one of the five pillars of Islam. So how can such a decision in the interest of infection protection be justified theologically?
And how do you think Saudi Arabia could justify the cancelling of the Hajj?
What was interesting for us to see is that the Hajj pilgrimage has actually been cancelled quite a few times in the history of Islam. But what was also interesting was that such cancellations mostly took place because of political or military clashes and conflicts. So we haven't seen a cancellation because of a pandemic yet, even though, of course, as we know, there have been quite a few pandemics in history, but none of them have led to canceling the Hajj so far. But some of the arguments that have been employed as regards political conflict can now be used to justify calling off the Hajj pilgrimage also because of the corona pandemic. So if, for example, if the travel is not considered safe, we know that Islamic law argues that in this case, the obligation to embark on the pilgrimage, the obligation upon the individual believer, lapses. This is an individual justification, however. So if one person cannot safely travel, then the obligation upon him or her lapses. But now what about the collective justifications? And we were asking ourselves, how can a collective cancellation by Saudi Arabia be justified? And in this regard, we particularly looked at what is so-called legal maxims. Legal maxims are basically principles of Islamic law or any legal system for that matter that provide the individual and the legal scholar with more broad, more general guidelines as to how to solve a certain question. For our specific question of whether a state can decide to, at least in 1 year, postpone or cancel such a religious obligation as the Hajj pilgrimage, we found two legal maxims that were particularly interesting. One is that the prevention of harm takes precedence over the gain of benefits. And the second legal maxim is that the risk of an individual harm is borne to prevent public harm. Both of these maxims could serve to justify even, let's say, a short notice cancellation of the upcoming pilgrimage, which might seem likely. And if we take the first version, for example, so the prevention of harm takes precedence over the gain of benefits. Well, the harm here seems obvious. We have the spread of the coronavirus, and we probably have increased numbers of people who fall ill to COVID-19, not only among the pilgrims, but potentially also within their communities as they return. So this is our harm. Now, what are the benefits? Well, the benefit for one is an individual benefit. An individual Muslim embarking on the Hajj pilgrimage, thereby fulfilling his or her religious duty. And then also in the view of many religious scholars, there is a general benefit because the annual pilgrimage also serves the, let's say, collective interest in preserving the religion. But with this first maxim, legal maxim in mind, we can now see that the prevention of the harm, as I just mentioned, takes precedent over the benefits that I laid out. So this is one maxim that can be used by Saudi Arabia. We have two goods that collide, and actually two goods that, in the view of many religious scholars, are paramount: protection of life and protection of religion. And generally, one would try to achieve prevention of harm while also achieving the acquiring benefit. But in this case, it seems as if the two means, the two goods can't really be reconciled. So harm must be prevented first. Now, the second maxim is that the risk of individual harm is borne to prevent public harm. And the individual harm, of course, would be that many people will not be able to undertake the Hajj pilgrimage this year. And it's not clear whether if they can't go this year, whether they will ever be able to embark on the Hajj pilgrimage. But the collective harm seems much larger in this regard. Again, the spread of the coronavirus, an increased number of COVID-19 rates, and people potentially dying from the disease. So here again, we see that using this legal maxim, even theologically, there might be a justification for a state to cancel the pilgrimage altogether and thereby prevent the further spread of harm.
So what would this mean for pilgrims?
Well, this is, again, the individual harm that I mentioned. You will be aware that many people around the world go to great lengths to undertake the annual pilgrimage. Financially, also, it's time consuming, but the financial burden is heavy on, weighs heavy on many. Visas are not easy to obtain. We talk about a number of roughly 2 million pilgrims per year now. Many more people would like to go. There is a visa lottery, so to speak, in place in many countries. So you will apply, but your visa will not automatically be granted. And now the question really is, if someone who was granted a visa this year, will he or she be able to go next year? So the personal harm is there, that's no doubt. And it will be great. But I hope that it may give comfort to some pilgrims that if they cannot go, at least they will know that these far-reaching measures are not without historical precedent. They aren't without theological basis. So this might bring some comfort, despite the harm, of course, being great.
So do you think that Saudi Arabia could solve this problem by restricting the number of pilgrims and try to be cautious, like wearing masks? Could this be a solution for this? Because the pilgrim Hajj is very important in Islam. So to cancel it is not an easy thing, like you said. So do you think there's going to be a good solution for that, or you don't know?
Well, to cancel it altogether would definitely be the most far-reaching decision to make. And as we can see with the current solution for communal religious activities, some countries, some communities have embarked on easing some of the restrictions. But at the same time, we also see that even with some of the restrictions being eased, there is still a heavy burden or a high risk, let's say, of infections nonetheless taking place. Now, we're not talking about a few hundred people and decreasing the number. We're talking about 2 million.
Yes, it's a big
number. Even if Saudi Arabia decided to cut it by half, this would still be a vast amount of people. And even in that case, many of the arguments that we bring forth or that we engage with in our article that we look into, many of these arguments will still be valid. Because even if you cut the number of pilgrims, those that are that will necessarily be excluded still have to ask themselves the same question. What does this for me? And is this theologically justified? So I think that probably in the interest of communal solidarity, it might actually be better to cancel it altogether this year, even though understandably this would be the most far-reaching decision. And as I mentioned before, this would be a first in the history of Islam, because so far we haven't really seen any instances of the pilgrimage being cancelled for medical reasons.
And especially, or the pilgrims has to stay almost in the same restricted place, which is, it's going to be the easier for the virus to spread out through the people.
Absolutely.
Yes, such is a very interesting article. How did you gather all this information? Did you do this at office, or did you do this at home? So did you have access to the library in Germany? Could you tell me more about that?
Well, by now, almost all of us are completely working from home. We are teaching online. Luckily, many resources by now are online. So working on this article, for example, hasn't been too difficult. It's a new topic. A lot of the advice that has been given out now is available online. There are some challenges still, of course, with library closed and not everything being digitized. And then, of course, there's the health aspect.
Yeah.
And I believe that you can say more about that. Your research focuses on public health and exercise physiology. So can you give us tips on how to stay healthy while working from home?
It's just really important, Lena, to be active, especially these days. So, you know, when you do some exercises, you improve your immune system, and you need this immune system to be strong, especially these days, to fight the virus. So in order to strengthen your immune system, you have to do some physical activity or any kind of exercise. A few tips that I will try to give you, and hopefully that will be really good for all people. Try, because we are staying in limited places like home and restricted places, we don't have any access to any gyms. So we are tend to sit more often than the normal days before the pandemic of Corona. Try to not to sit for no longer than 1 hour. So if you're sitting for an hour, try at least to stand up, take a walk for a couple of minutes, and you could come back and sit. If you're watching TV, if you're doing your home, if you're doing work at home, so try to really not to sit for a long time. This is the first tip. Second tip, try to do some stretching. There are a lot of videos in YouTube that you could watch for stretching. Also, there is another kind of stretching, which is yoga or tai chi. These kind of exercise actually could reduce your stress. While doing this exercising, taking a deep breath, that you're going to have more oxygen going through your organs, you're going to feel better, as well as your body going to release a good hormone like endorphin. Endorphin is really the happy hormone called, which means that you will be more happy, and this will reduce the stress and anxiety. So also try to take the stairs up and down. Try to do any physical activity. Don't underestimate anything. So even if you are preparing, cleaning, cooking, these kind of physical activity consider to be really good for our health. Don't underestimate any step that you're taking at home. If you allow to go outside for a walk, this would be good. If not, do any kind of exercise at home. These are my advice. Do some dancing. This will be really good for your mood and for your health. You could play with your kids. That will be really bonding with your kids, as well as you could do both. If you could do physical activity, which also could improve your immune system, as well as reducing the stress level.
Thank you. That sounds very helpful indeed. And you mentioned playing with your children and bonding. I assume just as is the case in Germany and Kuwait, most schools will still be closed. And you resort to online teaching with children as well. But how about physical education for children in Kuwait? Is physical education also being taught online?
Actually, in Kuwait, the public school actually it has stopped completely. There is no online classes until the 4th of August. So there is no classes, any classes. So unless for the public school, it's optional if you would like to do it online or not. This is actually what I am worried about. You know that we have a big percentage in Kuwait regarding the obesity, as well as Kuwait, we have 25% of the population have diabetes type 2. With all this corona pandemic restricting our life and activity, So I'm really worried this obesity rate will increase, as well as diabetes. So because we don't do any activity, as before the pandemic, students go to the school, they do a few classes a week, but right now there is no classes whatsoever. So I really encourage parents to let kids play. I know it's really specific or limited places at home, but it's really good for them as well as good for the whole country. This will actually reduce the incidence of diabetes type 2, and the cardiovascular diseases would lower the blood pressure. I encourage parents as well as the children to do physical activity at home. And there is no restriction. I know it's tough to do it, but you have to use to it. But trust me, when you do it, you're going to feel better. You're going to have less stress. You're going to improve your immune system. For this reason, I believe it's very critical to do some exercise or physical activity at home.
At least in some German states, they have started today to open the playgrounds for children, at least during the day.
Oh, that's good. That's really good news.
So what about you yourself? I assume you're staying healthy and fit, but how has the corona pandemic affected your research projects within Agia?
In regard, actually, to Agia, I'm supposed to do an awareness campaign, which is basically going to target the muscles, how we have to increase our muscles and reducing the fat. By this way, we could reduce the cardiovascular diseases, and we could reduce the blood pressure, as well as to reduce the incidence of diabetes type 2. Right now, with this situation, I'm assuming I have to postpone this campaign for the next year, to 2021. Hopefully, it's going to happen.
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully, many of the events that all of us planned will eventually take place.
Probably you have also a project with Agia. Could you tell me more about it?
So I too had a project that had to be postponed originally in mid-March. So right around the time when the corona pandemic affected Europe, I was supposed to host a workshop at the University of Leipzig on popular legal culture in the Middle East.
Interesting.
The workshop would have combined legal studies, media and communication studies, Middle East studies, and everything was set. But then, unfortunately, because the concerns around COVID-19 grew, we decided to ultimately postpone the workshop. Okay. We hope to host an author workshop in August. Again, potentially it has to take place in a digital format. Luckily, by now we've all grown accustomed to convening online. So, should this happen online? Should we convene our workshop online? Do you have any additional suggestions how to include, let's say, a small workout during such an online meeting?
So, like I told you, it's doing any physical activity. It's really important. And actually will increase your attention, especially if you're sitting at home and you're attending the workshop or any conferences online, that you have to be focused. So during or between the workshop or lectures, that you could do any kind of breathing techniques, that you have to take any deep breath, exhale, inhale. This will improve and increase the oxygen concentration in your blood, which will increase the oxygen delivery to your brain. That will increase your focus and attention. Also, you could do any stretching while you are sitting. So stretch your neck, you could stretch your arms. You could also try to squeeze your cuffs, because when you increase your cuffs, this will push the blood from your legs to your heart.
Thank you very much, Mohammed. I might include those exercises in my afternoon work routine right away. Thank you very much. This was very helpful.
Thank you. And try it and you will feel the difference.
I will. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Lena.
Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you. Same to you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the first episode of Agia Goes Viral. You can find additional information on this and upcoming episodes on our website, agia.info. That's agya.info. Until next time, please stay healthy and safe.